たします。
エペソ人への手紙4章23節から24節まで。またあなた方が心の霊において新しくされ、真理に基づく義と聖をもって神にかたどり作り出された新しい人を身に着るべきことでした。箴言29章の18節。幻がなければ民は欲しいままに振る舞う。しかし律法を守る者は幸いである。第二コリント人への手紙9章6節から8節まで。私はこう考えます。少しだけ蒔く者は少しだけ刈り取り、豊かに蒔く者は豊かに刈り取ります。一人一人いやいやながらでなく、強いられてでもなく、心で決めた通りにしなさい。神は喜んで与える人を愛してくださいます。神はあなた方を常にすべてのことに満ち足りて、すべての良い技にあふれるものとするために、あらゆる恵みをあふれるばかり、次何です、あふれるばかり。 Where is the next verses after? ないの。I don't remember after. Well, that's it, I guess. There is no more verses.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Sometimes fewer verses are better, actually. All right. Let me go ahead and see if we can get this up. Well, good morning. My name is Bryce Yoko Mizo. And I'm going to be our speaker today. You can turn it off. That's, in fact, yeah, that's better. The less they see of me and the more they see of that is better. Yeah. So my name, again, is Bryce Yoko Mizo.
Maybe I should have introduced Bryce. Bryce, I'm sorry. I should have introduced you. I thought you guys might have known Bryce, but this is an amazing man of God. He is from San Fernando Valley Holiness Church, now called Crossroad Church.
Crossway Church.
And Bryce is just a man of God. He's not a professional minister, and for good reason. Because God has used him powerfully and mightily in the city and county of Los Angeles. I don't know if you were going to share a little bit about yourself, but he's just been, I think, one of the most influential Japanese American in the Los Angeles County, just working for the Los Angeles County. He's just a great guy.
Okay. Thank you. Well, the most important thing I want you to know is I'm not a pastor, okay? So, and as I talk more and more, that will become more and more apparent to you. So, I'm so pleased to be here today. It's been a long time since I've been here. Actually, this is about my third time to the Tucson Church. But the last time I was here was like way back in the 1990s sometime. Phil's kind of nodding because I had black hair in those days, so it's been a long time. So it's been a number of years, and I got a call from our pastor, Reverend Hazama. He called me about a month and a half ago. He said, Bryce, I'm supposed to go to Tucson to speak in early May. He said, but I can't make it. So do me a favor. He said, can you go to Tucson and speak for me on that trip? And so I said, okay, well, what am I supposed to talk about when I go to Tucson? And so he says, it doesn't matter. You just go and just give a message, and anything that you talk about is okay. So I emailed Aki. I said, well, Aki maybe will give me, you know, maybe a better idea about what to speak about. So I said, Aki, what should I speak about? It doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like, whatever is on your heart, wherever the Spirit leads, that's what you should talk about. So I was thinking, you know what? This is going to be so easy. This is going to be easy trip to Tucson, because I'm just going to talk about like U of A basketball, because I know you guys want to hear about basketball, right? Going to talk about U of A basketball. I'll give a nice, easy, light, very lightweight message. Very lightweight message. I'll be happy. Tucson will be happy. I get back on the plane. I fly back to LA. Everything is fine. Everything is good. Okay? So that was the plan. That was the plan. Simple message. Make it easy. Make it light. And then go back home. Okay? But then things changed. Something happened last week that changed things. I had to go to a meeting. I was asked to go to a Holiness Leadership Conference meeting. It's called the Holiness Shepherds Council. They are the leaders of our denominational conference of churches. And they asked me to go to that meeting to discuss spiritual vision, because the conference is in the process of developing a new vision statement. And so they wanted to just, you know, talk about some ideas for that. So I just went to the meeting. So I went to the meeting. It was at LA Holiness Church. I went to the meeting last week. And all during the meeting, it was a very, very heavy agenda. Okay? And at the meeting, the conference leaders spent a lot of time talking about just one thing. And that one thing that they talked about was, what shall we do with the Tucson church? What is going to happen to the Tucson church, and what can we do as far as the leadership of the church to encourage Tucson? Okay? And so they talked about that so much that the Holiness Shepherd Council asked me, they said, are you going to go to Tucson next week, right? I said, yeah, I'm going to go next Sunday. They said, would you do us a favor? Would you go, when you go to the Tucson church, will you share some of the concerns that the conference has about Tucson and the ministry there? And be just very honest and be very forthright with everybody. Just let everybody know about some of the concerns the conference has, and maybe it would be a good encouragement to the JCCT to really maybe rethink how they might want to look at ministry. So I'm sorry to say I'm not going to be talking about basketball today. I am going to be bringing somewhat of a message from the Holiness Conference. And so I want to share that with you. But keep in mind, I want to do this in with the heart of really, truly loving and encouraging in all ways. So let's get into the message. And I want to first talk about what I decided to call this message today. I decided to call it JCCT, A Hope for the Future. So that's going to be the focus of our message today. A hope for this group of people, many of whom are here right now. In this picture, I wanted to know how many people were actually in the Tucson church. And I know that there are some young people and some adults and children and teenagers, but I counted up. I asked Gary Yamashita, who visited here. He said there's about 35 to 38 people. And I counted on this picture, and there was 38 adults in this picture. So I know that not everybody comes every week, but that is a very, very good thing. And I just want to know, for those of you that are here, I wanted to ask, how many of you have been maybe coming here for more than, say, 3 years? How many? See, oh, quite a few of you. Quite a few. That's great. That's great, because it's an indication of a commitment that you've made to JCCT. So I want to take a look at some basic facts about the Holiness Conference and its relationship with JCCT, and some questions which the conference and JCCT may need to consider. Some things to maybe think about. Okay? First of all, I want to tell you a little bit about the Holiness Conference, because some of you may not be that much aware of what the conference looks like. The Holiness Conference is probably over 75 years old now, and many of its early churches, particularly Los Angeles Holiness Church, which is right here, was one of its first churches. But it's a conference of now 17 churches. 9 of the churches are located in the San Fernando, in the Southern California area, the San Fernando Valley Church that is Aki's home church, and the church that I come from is now called Crossway Church of the San Fernando Valley. Then there are four Northern California churches. There are three Hawaii churches, Honolulu Christian, Mililani, and West Oahu. And then there's one church out in Arizona, of all places. It's called the Japanese Christian Community of Tucson. So that's the one exception, is that we have 17 churches all in California or Hawaii, except for one, and that's the JCCT. Okay? During its brief history, JCCT has done God's will in very, very positive ways. This has been a very, very encouraging ministry to the conference in many, many ways. You know, Japanese people celebrate on New Year's. And so we always have, at our house, we always have like a New Year's party, or Shogatsu party. And so everybody likes to bring things, and we put things out. And people kind of visit all day long. Some people come in the morning, some people come in the afternoon. But there was somebody that visited me on New Year's Day for Shogatsu, and it was a lady whose name was Reiko Yoshitani. She came to my house, and she wanted to just spend New Year's with our family. And so she and her husband, Rio, came over to our house, and we had a wonderful time talking. And so much of the time that we spent talking about JCCT. Because that's very close to Reiko's heart, as you know, particularly the old-timers who know Reiko and have been around a long time with JCCT and its history. And so there are many very positive things about what this church has done. First of all, I don't know if another Nichigo-based congregation has baptized more people than JCCT. We have a number of Japanese-speaking congregations within our 17 church conference of churches, but I don't think there has been one that has baptized more Japanese nationals that were over here than JCCT. Moreover, some of them have returned to Japan to encourage the Lord's work there. And the impact of that really is really not known to us. It's known to God, of course. But there can be some very, very strong implications for the work that JCCT has done here that even carries on to this day in parts of Japan as a result of some of the foundational instruction and encouragement they received here in Arizona. Also, this is what I really appreciate. JCCT has a core group of very strong Christian leaders. Many of you know, who have been here for a long time, that it's not easy to stick with a church through good times and bad times, through times of abundance and lean times. So it's very, very difficult to stick it out and persevere. And of course, you can read much about perseverance in the Bible. But of course, it's not an easy thing to do. It's an easy thing to say, but not an easy thing to do, to stick with the good times and the bad, to really make a contribution. And there are so many strong leaders in this church that have been so loyal to the Lord in that process. I think it's a very, very strong point about one of the additional strengths of JCCT. Okay, however, there are strengths and there are some things that we can think about. There's a number of concerns that I think we should consider, all right? And this is part of the discussion items that have been taking place over the years at the leadership level of the conference. Our conference mission is to plant and nurture thriving communities of faith and love that will share the good news of Jesus Christ with all the world, with an abiding call to reach people of Japanese ancestry. So we see here the mission statement of the conference. And the conference tries to keep an eye on the mission statement when it reviews its churches to see whether or not the churches are really adhering to what the mission of the conference is and what the purpose truly is. So the conference has been looking at JCCT and feeling that we all must consider together, number one, does JCCT have a vision for the future? Is there a vision for this church? Is JCCT growing as a thriving community? Is it a growing, thriving community? Is JCCT growing in spiritual maturity? Is JCCT outreaching to share the gospel? And can JCCT do more than they're doing now? Or are they saying to themselves, well, this is all we can do. We're just going to be here next Sunday and we're going to basically do the same thing. Don't ask us to do any more because maybe we can't do any more. Maybe we're doing everything we can do right now. Okay? So, 12 of the conference churches are financially independent. Okay? 12 of the 17. Here's another fact. However, if a church is unable to support itself, the conference encourages and assists them with financial aid. So we oftentimes have church plants. We call them planter churches, they're new ministries that we want to encourage and set up. And because of that, the conference wants to support them financially as well. Not just to send them out there and hope that they make it, but they want to really be able to support them financially. Now, Tucson JCCT is one of the 5 conference churches that is receiving aid from the conference. And JCCT receives the highest amount of aid, $24,000 annually. JCCT receives the most amount of aid of any church of the 5 churches in the conference that are assisted. Okay? Some of them receive annually maybe in the range of maybe $5,000 to $7,000 annually. But again, the conference has made a very, very firm commitment to the Tucson church here. Current conference policy is for a church to be aided for 5 years. That's the whole plan. To set up a church plant and to aid that church financially for 5 years. Each year, the aid will be reduced by 20%. So we can see that if we reduce it by 20% a year, it then becomes 80% of aid, 60, 40, 20. And then ultimately, the hope is that the Lord will grow that church so that it becomes self-sufficient and it can stand on its own. And that's the whole purpose behind the church policy. And they want to hope to strengthen its giving and ministry outreach to a point that it can grow and become a thriving community church. Okay, so Tucson JCCT has been on aid now for 13 years. Okay, it's been 13 years on aid. During that time, the conference has supported JCCT with over $300,000. Okay, so the conference has supported JCCT with over $300,000 in the past 13 years. And last year, JCCT said they couldn't reduce aid by 20%. And I understand that. It's a big change for the conference to say, we're asking all of the aided churches to reduce their amount of aid by 20% this year. Okay? JCCT said, conference, please, we can't do that. We can't do that. And so the conference agreed. And they said, okay, we won't cut your aid. We'll leave your aid at the current level. The other 4 conference churches that are aided all reduced their aid by 20%. But JCCT, we will leave you at the same level of aid without reducing you. However, what the conference decided was that they would reduce by 25% starting in June 4 of 2014. That's next month. Starting next month. Okay? And all aid will cease in 4 years. So it will be reduced. Aid will be reduced by 25% over the next 4 years. And that is the current plan of the conference in its continued support of JCCT. Okay? So I just want to make sure that you kind of have an understanding. So you understand how the conference works with regard to its financial support of churches that request aid. Okay? So, the conference has reviewed JCCT's latest financial report. Now, the church here has been very, very cooperative and supportive of the conference in many, many ways, in participating, even though many of the events take place in California, Hawaii, and elsewhere. It's always good to see that we have Arizona representation by our church here at all of our conference main functions. Now, these are some of the considerations here. One of the things that was submitted by your board is they submitted the last financial report, annual report, from June 2012 through May of 2013. That's what we call a church fiscal year. And the conference, the report turned in by JCCT showed that the annual giving was $28,000. And the conference and JCCT must consider if JCCT will ever be able to support itself. Will it ever become an independently church that can stand on its own? Will that ever happen? Is JCCT even aware of their giving? Do they even know about their giving? Can stewardship discussions be helpful? Can we at least, would it be helpful if we shared information with the church about stewardship and shared information about what the actual practical picture is about the situation? Would that be helpful? So I guess this all comes to say that the conference and JCCT are now in a very challenging position. We're at kind of like a fork in the road position. We don't know what direction JCCT is going to go. And so we got to seek God's direction, a new direction for JCCT. We know that for the past 13 years, we basically have not been able to get off of aid yet. So we're wondering, maybe, what are we going to, are we going to turn this way, or are we going to turn this way? Which way is JCCT going to go? Are they going to do things the same way they always have, or maybe they're going to maybe seek a different way of doing things? Okay? That's not to say that old ways are bad. There's many good things that I pointed out that are very good about what the Lord's calling has been for this church. And the church is in existence today still. But we need to sometimes look at ourselves about the passage that we had looked at earlier about renewing our minds and putting on a new self in a new direction. Okay? So we're going to get to that Ephesians passage right now. It may be time for a renewal. JCCT should prayerfully seek to renew its spirit. Maybe put off the old self and put on the new JCCT. Okay? So to quote from Ephesians 4:23-24, it says, "And be renewed in the spirit of your minds and put on a new self." Okay? A new self created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. That's an important aspect, the verse 24 part, because we don't want to put in a new self that is ourselves. We want to put in a new self that is following the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. That's the key. We can always say, I'm going to change. I'm going to change and not do what I used to do. I'm going to do something differently. But if you're not following God's lead in that process, then you still might be following a deceitful passage or a deceitful way if you're following yourself. So we want to get rid of the old ways sometimes that are oftentimes, the verse 22 that comes before this talks about deceitful hearts. Sometimes how a deceitful heart, and those are our human hearts. Oftentimes our human hearts will tell us. And we oftentimes have those same decisions ourselves, don't we? We oftentimes in life come to that Y in the road, kind of like the fork in the road that we saw, where we see, you know, I could go two ways here. I could go my way, or I could go God's way. Which way am I going to choose? Sometimes, hopefully, our way is already aligned with God's way. But in other times, the way that we choose is not aligned necessarily with God's purpose for our lives. Okay? Worth a consideration. I want to make a quote here that Minoru-san put. I was looking on the JCCT website. This statement by Minoru-san really, really struck home with me as I was thinking about this message. He was talking about the history of JCCT on the website. And his final statement in talking about the history was, "We do look forward to a new phase of spiritual growth." Those are the closing words of his letter. We do look forward to a new phase of spiritual growth. And you know what? I think we would agree with that. And it may be time now. That time for a new phase, maybe that's right now. Maybe it's time to consider a new phase of growth and spiritual development for JCCT, okay? It may be time to seek God's vision or His greatest hope for JCCT. This leads us to the next verse, Proverbs 29:18. When you talk about vision, if you Googled in vision Bible, this is the verse that would come up. This verse comes up more with reference to vision than any other verse. In the King James Version, it says, "Without a vision, the people perish." Right? Okay. So it's a common. This is out of the ESV. But the mistake, from what I've read of biblical comments, biblical scholar comments, the mistake about this particular verse is that many churches give the wrong interpretation of this verse, because they use this verse, vision, to highlight what it is that they want to do. Everybody's got to give money for a new church building, because, you know, without a vision, the people will perish. Okay? And so what biblical scholars say is that's the incorrect context of this. Where the correct context is that where there is no, this is the key word here, prophetic vision. Because this suggests that it's not human hearts and human vision that's dictating policy here, but it is prophetic. Some translations actually have this as the word prophetic is in some translations written as revelation. If there is no revelation, and they put revelation from God. Okay? So I think the important thing to think about when we think about what is the future of JCCT, what is the future of Tucson, and what is the future of our vision for the future, the most important aspect of it is to remember that it's not our vision. What is it that is God's vision for us? That's the critical concern and consideration. What is God's vision for us? Not what my vision is or your vision. What would God be? So how do we do that? What is God's vision for us at JCCT? And what are some of the things we could do to pursue His vision? First of all, I looked on JCCT's website. I didn't see a vision statement. I did see a mission statement. And maybe you're thinking about a vision statement, or maybe it was someplace else and I missed it. But it might be good to think about, what direction are we going in? Where are we headed as a church? And what should our vision be? Not necessarily our vision, but what's God's revelation to us as His vision for JCCT? And let me give you an example of this that might be easier to understand. It's almost like we're having this discussion, and all of a sudden, the roof opens up. We don't know why, but the roof just separates. And a beam of light that shines so bright, we can't really even look at it with our eyes. And then standing before us is Jesus Himself. Jesus is saying, "How did you get to Tucson, Jesus?" He's actually here in Tucson. And He looks at us all, and He says this one thing to us. He says, "I just came to tell you something, and that is this. My greatest hope and vision for this Tucson church is this." And He walks over to each of you, and He whispers, "That greatest hope for Tucson in your ear." He whispers His greatest hope to you. The question becomes, what did Jesus just tell you? What did He whisper to Tucson? What did He whisper? That's what our conference is struggling with right now. Because they were talking about vision, and they were asking about vision and how we might be able to formulate a vision for our conference, because that's what we're doing right now. We're trying to develop a vision for the conference. Now, you know what the proposed vision of the conference is right now? It's a bunch of F's, because
sometimes strategic management planners, they like to make things kind of cute, so they put it in different things that people can remember. So the conference had a preliminary one that they developed, and has a lot of F's in it. Some of the F's are pretty good, like faith. That's a good F. But some of them are, one of the F's is fellowship. One of the F's is flexibility. Okay? Now, my question is this. If we're really developing a vision statement for the conference, and I mentioned this last week as I was speaking to the leaders of the Holiness Shepherds Conference, I said, if God came down and he's truly formulating a vision for the conference, would he say to you, I'm here, Holiness Conference, and I have to tell you, my greatest hope for you is that you would remember this one thing. Flexibility. Above all, flexibility. Now, would Jesus say that to us? Maybe he would. I don't know. Or would he come down and he said, you know what? Everybody, my greatest hope for the Holiness Conference is this. Above all, fellowship. Fellowship. Always remember fellowship. Because eating is really great. Okay? Would he say fellowship? I don't know. Maybe Jesus would. But that's the challenge that Tucson needs to take on. Developing a vision of what God's greatest hope, what Jesus' greatest hope would be for this church. What would that be? Make it simple and make it exactly what you feel Jesus would say. What he would whisper in your ear as a hope. My wife and I were on vacation recently, and when we go on vacation, we like to visit other churches because, you know, we can't go to our regular church, so we're driving around in different states. And we went to this church once, mega church. It was a mega church. We pulled in, every car, not every car, but many of the cars had these stickers on the window, on the rear window. It said, GF, GF. And then, as we were walking into the church for service, we saw a lot of guys walking, they had baseball caps on. GF, GF. GF. What the heck are they doing? GF. I saw people walking with t-shirts. GF, GF. I found out later, after we attended this church, that their vision is God first. God, everything we do is God first. It doesn't matter whether we're outreaching, it doesn't matter where we're Bible studying, fellowshipping, it's an all-inclusive vision that any activity we do in our church relates to that one vision. And for this particular church, they decided that God first. It's what everybody will know, everybody can state. See, a lot of vision statements, you walk in there and say, what's your vision statement? And they say, gee, I don't know, let me look on the website. I'll get right back to you on that. Okay? That's not a good vision statement. A good vision statement, and if you read the book of Habakkuk has many things about vision, and they always say in Habakkuk, make it plain. Make it plain. So, vision should be plain, and it should be Christ-focused with God's greatest hope for the church. Okay? That's just something to maybe think about for vision. But what are some of the practical things we need to think about? I want to show you this picture. Because it's a very famous picture about an event that took place 102 years ago in 1912. In 1912, this ship, it was called the Titanic, it sank. This ship was never supposed to sink. They say, you can't sink this ship. Maiden voyage, first voyage out, what happens to the ship? Hits an iceberg, April 14th, 1912. Over 2,000 people were on this ship. And over 1,500 of the 2,000 plus died. They were not saved. They drowned in the frigid waters. Okay? One of the things that we always want to remember as a church, this is just a practical thought, and one of the things that's consistently aligned with our conference mission statement is we want to focus on the gospel and the good news of Jesus Christ, not just for ourselves, but for those that are out there. And in some ways, this picture is really telling because we see, I don't know if you can see it well, but there are lifeboats in the water. There's a lifeboat here, a lifeboat there, lifeboat here. There's lifeboats at different parts. You see people standing up in their lifeboats over here. And then, of course, you see all of the unsaved people hoping to be saved and picked up. All right? These lifeboats are churches. Those lifeboats are churches. Picture it as being that. And the Tucson church is this lifeboat. All right? Now, the problem with churches is churches get distracted. Churches get distracted. Why? Because they say, hey, our boat's bigger than your boat. Our boat has nicer paint. Our boat has nicer oars. And we have stronger people rowing our boat than your boat. Okay? Churches oftentimes even have internal conflicts inside the boat. Sometimes the leadership doesn't really get along well. And there's often challenges that come up as a result of what happens inside churches. But if we remember one thing by looking at this picture, that the whole purpose and vision of a church is not so much what happens inside of our church boat, but all of the people outside that need to be saved. And the fact that we have something for them, we can rescue them and have a salvation that we can provide for them as a church. That is something worth considering. That's something worth considering as a church. Okay? Here's some other possible things. I don't know anything about Tucson. I don't know. I've only been here a few times. I don't know that much about Tucson at all. But there are many ways that you can brainstorm that you will know better than I will about what Tucson might be able to do to put on a new self, to seek a new spiritual direction. How about a renewed U of A or other college outreach? Maybe that's something that can be done. At one time, when Reiko first started this outreach church, there were many, many students. Many, many students. And the people that have been here a long time understand that and they remember that. Maybe it's time to regenerate that. Now, maybe you might tell me, well, Bryce, you know, U of A doesn't have that many Japanese students anymore. And maybe that's true. So, but maybe there are other colleges that do. It might be worth looking at. Now, what about not making it exclusively Japanese? What if we tried to appeal as a general Asian population church? There are... Now, Tucson is an interesting thing. I was trying to study Tucson on the U.S. Census site and related sites to find out more about the Tucson population. Now, Tucson's getting bigger and bigger, and it's growing. Pima County has almost a million people living in it now. Over 980,000 living in Pima County. Now, when they talk about Tucson, they talk about Tucson proper, which is about roughly a little less than 600,000 people. But then they said the greater Tucson area, I don't know what that means, but I imagine it's Tucson and the surrounding areas are almost 800,000 now. So it takes up like the lion's share of Pima County. The Asian population in Greater Tucson is over 24,000. 24,000. So we may say, well, gee, I wonder if this building could hold 24,000 people. Is that worth consideration? Is it worth it to go outside of the Japanese population? Now, maybe the decision, or maybe in thinking through, maybe it doesn't work that way, and maybe we say, no, we should stick to strictly Japanese. Well, the Japanese population in Tucson is 1,658 in Tucson, Japanese. Now, will 1,658 people fit into this room? Probably not. We couldn't even get a 20th of those people into this room. We couldn't even fit them here. Okay? But those people are out there. I guarantee you one thing. Most of them are out there somewhere. They're not Christians, and they're not saved. They're in that water, but there's no boat that has picked them up. Now, there may not be a better church that can pick up one of those 1,658 Tucson Japanese than this church. I don't know. Maybe another church would do a better job. But I think that you probably make better sushi than they do, than any other church. And I bet you that you can
relate in other ways. There are various Japanese organizations I found out throughout Tucson. I looked it up. There's a Japanese Association of Tucson, Arizona.
Now, you know what's funny? Right this very minute, at noon, they're having a picnic at a place called Brandy Fenton Park today. I have no idea where Brandy Fenton... I never heard of Brandy Fenton. I don't know where Brandy Fenton is. It sounds like a guitar or something to me. I never heard of Brandy Fenton. I don't know where it is.
I'd be lost if I couldn't even point you in the direction of Brandy Fenton Park. But there's the Japanese Association of Tucson, Arizona is meeting there today. The Japan America Society of Tucson, all right, has things going on. I was driving. I got picked up at the airport today by Min and Evelyn, and they were talking to me about the Pan-Asian community. Wow. And that's where you first met Reiko, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. It worked once before. I wonder if that would work again. I don't know. But is it worth considering if we're thinking about putting on a new self and a new direction? Might be worth considering. Schools, prisons, surrounding Hispanic neighbors. You know, our church is changing. Why? Because in the United States of America, the Japanese population is the only Asian population that's actually shrinking in size. Okay? Every other Asian population, the Koreans, the Chinese, Vietnamese, Cambodian, Lao, Malaysians, Filipinos in particular, Koreans, all growing. There's only one that's shrinking. That's the Japanese population. Okay? People are not dying to get out of Japan. People are not basically immigrating out of Japan. Okay? So, one of the things that we're noticing in our church is that we've got to do more. We need to be more outwardly focused. And we can't just be thinking, okay, Japanese only. We're thinking of other things. We're doing various ministries. We've adopted two schools now. And so we teach, if you get a chance and get an opportunity, look up Good News Club. It's been around for years and years and years and years. The Good News Club is national. And it is an opportunity to share Bible lessons with public school children. Now, you might think to yourself, now that's against the law, is it? You can't teach Bible in school. Oh, no, you can't. The Supreme Court has ruled that you can teach the Bible in school, but you do it after school is over. And you make it not a mandatory, but a voluntary thing. And our church has adopted two elementary schools in our neighborhood, and we have Good News Club. Those kids love learning about the Bible. And you don't even have to worry about the lesson. The Good News Club has a curriculum for you. They just give it to you free. And you can actually teach the Bible and do outreach. And as a result of that, we've had some new members come into our own church. Now, they're not Japanese, I have to tell you that. Okay? There are Hispanic families. But it's wonderful. It's wonderful having them join us. It's wonderful having them become a part of our church family. Halloween. Because of what Halloween represents, we don't have Halloween at our church. We have All Saints Night. But we invite the entire neighborhood. The entire neighborhood can come to All Saints Night. All the kids have games. We set up booths. We set up different booths where the kids can play games. We have candy. We have contests. We have different things. It's a great time. Prison ministry. Thursday nights, there's a group of us men that we go to the local juvenile hall, the Los Angeles County Juvenile Hall. And we give a Bible lesson every Thursday night. It is the most rewarding ministry, I think, that I've ever been involved in. Why? Because you think, I don't want to go talk to those juvenile delinquent kids that have done all these things. And you know what? They end up teaching me a lot about the love of Christ. And it's just, it is such a rewarding thing. It gives you so much more than, you go over there thinking, oh, I'm just doing this wonderful thing for these kids. No. You know what? God shows you many, many things when you step out in faith to serve. And they will show similar possibilities to JCCT. The possibilities for the Tucson JCCT ministries are endless. And the Lord will bless those who step out in faith. So think about that as you vision change, as you vision perhaps outreaching for the gospel. think in terms of not setting boundaries for yourself, but think so more of what it is, what can we do? Not so much what we can't do, but focus on what we can do. Well, we can't do that because, you know, we're kind of a small church. We can't do that because, you know, we're kind of Japanese speaking. Well, we can't do that, you know, because we're kind of, okay, I know there's a lot of that, but trust in God to see what He might encourage you to do. All right, I got to move along. Next scripture point we had is giving and stewardship. This is the scripture reference here. The point is this: whoever sows sparingly will reap sparingly, and whoever sows bountifully will reap bountifully. Each one must give as he has decided in his heart. That's the key part, right there, in his heart. Not under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. That's 2 Corinthians 9:6-8. I heard Larry Burkett once say, and he quoted some, there's more references to money and giving in the Bible than any other one subject. I don't know if that's true, but at least that's what I've heard biblical scholars say. It's an important thing to discuss, all right? Giving is hard, and I have not been a good example of being a generous giver. If somebody should not be talking to you right now about giving, that's me, okay? That's me. I have struggled with giving so much in my life that it's almost an embarrassment to talk about it, okay? It's almost an embarrassment for me to tell you about it. I mentioned my wife and I have been married for 36 years. We've been married for 36 years. When we were dating about 37 or 38 years ago, she had this bright idea she wanted to go to a church. I wasn't going to church in those days, and I really wasn't interested in going to church. I just don't want. I can watch the football game or something. I don't want to go to church. But because I was dating her, and she wanted to go to church, I figured, okay, I'll be nice. I'll be understanding. I'll go to church. So we went to this church, this local community church, and we're sitting there, and I'm listening. I'm kind of bored. I'm just kind of listening to this preach. But it gets to the offering time, and so they came walking around, and they passed this like this plate thing around, and everybody puts their offering in it, and they pass it on. My wife was sitting to my girlfriend at that time. Now my wife was sitting to my right. They passed the plate around, and out of the corner of my eye, after I had put $5 in the plate, I noticed that she had put a $20 bill in that plate. I thought she was crazy. She put $20 in that plate, because I saw it out of my eye. She had put $20 in that plate. This is almost 40 years ago. She put $20 in that plate. And I thought to myself, this is not a good thing. This is not a good thing. If I get married to this woman, if I marry this girl, she might be putting like my $20 in that. I almost felt like putting my hand in that $20 and snatching that $20 back. I could conceive of somebody putting that much money in the plate. Okay? As years have gone by, when I was, and many years as an adult, I went back and we became a member of the San Fernando Valley Homeless Church. Okay, and I want to tell you, very upfront and honestly, I never tithed to the church. I tithe is giving 10% of your income, and it is very much based on Old Testament. Okay. A tithe is 10%. And actually, a true tithe to the Hebrews, a true tithe was really more than 10%. That was one of the tithes. There's three different tithes. One of them went to the Levites, went to the priests. There was a priest tithe. There was a biannual tithe, and there was one tithe that was given to the poor. So there were actually three tithes. If you add the three tithes together, it ended up being a 23% share of income. So, to me, I'm not, forget about the 23%, I'm not even going to give 10%, okay? That's the way but I was still going to church. I'm there every week. I'm reading the Bible. I'm going to the Bible study. But when it comes to the money part,
See, that's where the rubber kind of hits the road. Because it's easy to say, ah, yes, I'm a Christian. And I go to Bible study and I go to church every Sunday. But when it came to actually giving the tithe, it was, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. And so I never tithe. I never tithe the church. Ultimately, something happened. I became a deacon in the church. And it even got worse than that. I became the chairman of the board of deacons. At that point, I had to tithe. Why? Because who ever heard of a chairman of the board of deacons who didn't tithe? I was almost, it was kind of like a hazukashi thing. You know, I mean, nice that Japanese were saying that this is, I've been shamed and embarrassed into tithing. So I was tithing only then because, again, I have no choice. You know, I can't help it. I'm on the board of deacons, so, and I'm the chairman, so I have to give. But you know what? Going back to the scripture reference, I recognize that while I was giving, my heart wasn't in it. I was still giving grudgingly. I was giving out of guilt. And so I started asking a lot of questions to myself about the giving part. Hey, if I don't go to church, if I don't go to church that Sunday, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Because while I don't go to church, and I might miss the message, don't have to give any money. So I kind of get off on that one. So going to church wasn't such a bad thing to happen to me, because that meant that I didn't have to give money that week. Okay? And so I would hear these discussions. I heard the discussion about giving in a small group ministry. And Rob Yonemoto was here last week. Wait, was he here? Rob Yonemoto was our pastor at that time. And the people in our small group, they asked him questions about giving. And they asked that question. They said, what? If I don't go to church that week, do I still have to make that up and pay the next week? That was the question. Okay. And another person asked this. If I do some volunteer work for the church, there's kind of like a value to that. Like a minimum wage value. So if I put in like 10 hours of work for the church, and I multiply that by minimum wage, can I deduct that from the amount of my giving? Because that's, in a way, that is giving. I am giving to the church, because my volunteer time is worth something, so that's got a value to it. I remember what Rabbi Yonemoto said to these questions. He said, ask yourself, why would you ask that question? Why are you asking that? Because that's talking about the heart. That's talking about the heart. It's not about the money. The money doesn't matter. That's talking about the heart. So giving is something that I have struggled with so much because it's hard for me. And biblically, you know what? It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man. You know, to give. Why? Because giving is hard. Because that really means something when you actually give. So, let's look at JCCT's financial report. Okay? This is from the financial report that's submitted. Annual current giving for JCCT is $28,000. Support from other churches is $6,900. Compensate, actually this is a mistake. This is a typo. That's $24,000 that the church, that the conference gives. Other income, total income was $72,000 for JCCT. Total expenses were $84,000. So at the end of the year, JCCT goes in the hole $12,000. Because income is not up to expenses. Because income is only, giving is only $28,750. And I'm not saying that's a small amount. That's a pretty big amount. Okay? But it still leaves us $12,000 in the hole. Okay. So, that means that if we had that 38 people in the picture,
And I know not 38 people are here every week, but if everybody turned in their money every week, even when they don't come to church, that's giving of about $14.55 per person weekly. That's of the adults. Okay? That's the JCCT Tucson giving is about $14.55 a week per person. Now, what we've had to do, and you guys are aware of this, we've had to reduce your pastor. Aki's now reduced to be a part-time status. But this came up at the Shepherd's Council meeting last week. And I almost didn't want to mention this because I know Aki would never mention this. Aki would never stand at this pulpit and say anything about conference policy or his part-time benefits. But I want to mention something to you. This is a picture. This is a picture of our Holiness Conference pastors from their conference retreat last year. Okay? Actually, there's two people on here who are not Holiness Conference. That's Ernie Kilborn, right down here, who's one of the founders of our conference, and his wife. So these people here, these are all our pastors. Okay? Now, there's only one pastor in this picture that has a basketball Laker t-shirt on. Guess which pastor it is? Well, you know who it's going to be. Who's wearing the Laker t-shirt here? It's Aki. Oh. And I would say not only the only Laker t-shirt, arguably probably the handsomest pastor also in the conference. And then we see Pastor Jean here, who you're familiar with. And if we look in here somewhere, Pastor Ichibe will be here. Oh, there's Ichibe back here. Got Ichibe Sensei back there. But this is all of our pastors. We have over 30 pastors in our conference. Now, Aki is the only one that has a basketball t-shirt on. But the one thing that the conference talked about last week, the conference leadership, is that Aki is also the only pastor without health insurance coverage, the only pastor without 403B benefit coverage from the conference any longer, and he's also the only pastor who does not get pension credit. Okay, he's the only pastor in the conference. Why? Because he is a part-time pastor, and part-time pastors are not entitled to conference benefits. So basically, Aki is working here in Tucson. Even though if he worked anywhere else, if he worked at any other church in the conference, Hawaii, Northern Cal, Southern Cal, he would be getting pension benefit coverage. He would be building his pension credit. He would also be building his 403B credit as well. But this was a major sticking point that was discussed with the conference, and why the conference did not want to allow Aki to go on part-time. Because of conference policy, he would lose his benefits. But Aki said, and again, he's not going to say this to you. I will say this to you. But Aki said, no, that's okay. That's okay. Keep me, let me remain in Tucson. That's okay. That's okay. All right? But I just want to add, the only reason I mention this is because it was a major discussion point among the leadership of the conference. All right, let's get back to talking a little bit about some of the challenges for Tucson. One of the challenges that we hear is that in Tucson it's more difficult. Why? Because the income levels are lower in Tucson. And you know what? I looked it up to find out if that was true, and it is true. It is absolutely true. The average per capita income of a Tucson resident, the average Tucson resident per capita makes $20,393 a year. Now, the average per capita income in the entire state of Arizona, guess what? $25,000. The average Arizona resident makes $25,000 a year. However, in the city of Tucson, that income level drops all the way down to $20,393. So it is absolutely true that there is a disadvantage of working in Tucson. Okay, because the income levels indeed are lower in Tucson than in other parts of Arizona. And of course, if you look at the census data, you know, there are some of the larger areas like Phoenix,
will seemingly drive that up. Another point, the U.S. poverty level, the welfare poverty level for an individual in the United States today, as of this year, 2014, is $11,670 annually. And that applies to the entire United States. So if a person says, I'm basically at poverty level, that means their poverty level is at about their income is $11,670 or less per year. Now, the Census Bureau does an interesting thing. Not only do they find out what the Tucson resident average income is, they also see what the percentage of the population at the poverty level is in the city, by cities, and it has to be by cities. And in Tucson, the percentage of residents in or at the poverty level or below the poverty level is 24%. So one out of every four people living in Tucson is at the poverty level or lower, okay? And the average income for a Tucson resident is $20,000. So these two figures become somewhat important when evaluating things like this. So we're going to ask a hypothetical question. Let's ask a hypothetical question. What would happen? What would happen to JCCT if everyone at JCCT, if we have maybe 38 adults, I know they're not here every week, but if they tithe, what would happen if everyone tithe, but not tithe like the general population, but let's say 50% of the church had income based on the poverty level of $11,670, and the other only 50% had the average income of $20,000 a year. Okay, what would happen? In other words, if half of the Tucson church was at poverty level, $11,000 a year, and the only, instead of being at 24%, poverty was real high in this church to 50%, and only 50% were making the per capita Tucson income, offering in this church would jump from $28,000 to $61,000. That's if half the people were at poverty level and the other half were no higher than the $20,000 average per capita income. Instead of a $12,000 deficit, JCCT would have a $14,982 a year surplus. And that would even include paying the 25% reduction, getting reduced by 25% in conference aid, it would still be almost a $15,000 a year budgetary surplus for this church. Okay? So, let's visit scripture again. The point is this, whoever sows sparingly will reap sparingly, whoever sows bountifully will reap bountifully. Each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. Okay? 2 Corinthians 9, 6-8. Giving, I want to repeat this again because you're taking it from a person who has a hard time giving. Giving is not easy. It's not about a Christian's money. It has nothing to do, this is not a discussion about money. It is a discussion about a Christian's heart. So, I want to tell you this. I am not going to stand before you today and say, would you please, everyone, if you could just tithe and just tithe at like poverty level, we could make it as a church. I'm not going to say that. What I am going to say is, if giving is still difficult for you, then you know what? Do not give. Don't give. If you say, you know what, I don't want, for whatever reason, I don't want to give. But I would ask you, though, to pray and seek how the Lord may be changing your heart, because giving, when you can do it cheerfully, that's what God wants you. That's what God's looking for. He's looking for a cheerful giving heart. I saw an article this week by a guy by the name of John Ortberg. John Ortberg is the editor of a Christian magazine called Christian Leadership. He's a pastor. In fact, he's a California pastor. He makes this point.
He says, Stanford researcher Leon Fessinger developed a line of research on social comparison theory. He noted that in different situations, we will tend to compare ourselves with people above us or compare ourselves with people below us, depending on what ladder we want to talk about. Interesting article by this researcher. For instance, he said, on morality, we will tend to compare ourselves with people we think are below us, such as mass murderers or drug dealers. But if we're talking about money, we will compare ourselves to people who we feel are above us. Those who have more money than we do or are earning more than we are. Upward financial comparisons, however, generate increasing amounts of greed and decreasing amounts of compassion. Interesting study that the author of Christian Leadership is trying to point out here. What he's trying to say is, if it's talking about money, we will always say, oh, well, but look how much he's making, or look how much she is making. See, look at that, look how much that is. It's always about somebody else who's making more. It's not about our own heart and what our own heart should be with regard to how our relationship of cheerful giving is with God, and just leaving it at that. It always has to be a comparison about somebody who's making more. Okay? So that's it. That's an interesting observation by Pastor Ortberg. But I think there's a level of truth to it. We do like to make financial comparisons. Okay? Rather than focusing on our true heart of giving. So, I'm going to end here with just a couple of encouragements. We are at a crossroads with the conference right now. Conference does not know what to do with Tucson. They don't know how much continued support they should give to Tucson, and whether Tucson or if any changes will occur. So I would encourage, if you can, give consideration to a visionary change here in Tucson. Think about things you've not thought about before. Think about visiting places you haven't visited before. Think of the gospel and think of outreach. Think of Tucson as being a boat, a lifeboat in the middle of the ocean with many unsaved people. 1,600 Japanese in Tucson alone. 1,600 of them. I don't know where they are, but they are out there. They are out there. Or 24,000 Asian Americans in Tucson, if that's where you feel the calling is. Or maybe X number of anybody, regardless of who they are, that you might want to encourage through school ministries, through prison ministries, through whatever you choose. It's your call. Okay? The second thing I would encourage you is to think about perhaps the aspect of giving cheerfully. Not under compulsion, or not because you feel guilty. But give what you really truly feel is a prayerful consideration after you've sought what you feel the Lord has placed on your heart with regard to giving. And it's not, again, I will say this again, it's not easy. We had two missionaries come to our church last week to share. I'm listening to these missionaries, and I'm thinking, oh, that's, I really think that's a great ministry they have. It happened to be, their names were the Fongs. And the interesting thing about these is that they were Chinese Americans. And guess where they were going to minister? Japan, yeah. Chinese Americans, two Chinese Americans, they're going to Japan to minister. Okay, they've got two small children, and they're going to take those two small kids with them. Todd and Jane Fong, I believe, were the names. Anyway, they're going to go with GEMS. They're going to go on a mission. They're going to be spending the next few years in Japan. Why do I mention this to you? I mention this to you because my wife, when we got home that day, my wife says to me, "Hey, you know, Bryce, wasn't that just a great sharing by the Chinese the missionaries?" And she says, "And the fact that they're Chinese Americans and..." We should be the ones going to Japan, and they're going to Japan to really, really make this difference. And I said, yeah. I said, yeah, yeah. He said, well, I think we should write a check for their ministry and send it in the trips. I said,
Honey, I couldn't agree more. Right, let's write a check and let's send it in. Let's send it to GEMS in their support. Totally agree. Now, I have to tell you, and I'm glad my wife's not here, because she'd be slugging me if I told you this. But I had a dollar figure in my mind of the amount that we should send to GEMS in support of the farms. Okay. So she said yes. She says I wrote the check out. I said, and I'm going to send it. I said, okay, fine. So by the way, I said, how much did you make? How much did you make that check out for? I will tell you something. She wrote a check out for 5 times the amount that I had in my head. Okay. I don't know. It was like a $20 bill. I said, are you crazy? But I didn't say anything. You know why? Because that's between me and my heart. That's between me and my heart. It has nothing to do with my wife. It doesn't even have anything to do with, the dollar amount is not important. It has to do with how cheerfully my heart is with regard to giving and what the Lord places on my heart. And I have continually a lot of growth to do in that area. So please pray for me and pray for a more generous heart for me. Because it's not about Tucson. It's about all of us. It's about all of us. I wish God's greatest, richest blessing upon this church. And if you don't mind, I'd like to close this in a quick word of prayer. Father God, what a blessing it's been to just share time with my brothers and sisters here in Tucson, Father. There's just so many challenges that are before this church. This is not an easy ministry out here, Father. And Father, I just pray your richest blessing upon each member of this Tucson church, this JCCT, Father, which over the years, Father, has just done so much to encourage and baptize those who will go out and make believers of all nations, particularly in Japan, Father. So again, I just pray that the words and the meditations of my heart were not of me, Father, but were of you and what the Holiness Conference wishes to convey to the Tucson leadership. But I also want to pray for Pastor Aki and for Mandy, Father. I know, Father, this is not an easy ministry for them. It would be so much easier to say, you know what, get me out of Tucson. You know what, yeah, if you want to assign me to another church in California or Hawaii, that's fine. Go ahead and do that, because financially, he would be much better off for it. But Father, they have decided not to make that decision. They have decided instead to be with this church, Father, to shepherd this church. And Father, I again pray not only for the richest blessing upon this church, but for your richest blessing upon Mammy and Aki as well. Father, it's such a blessing to share. But Father, place your spirit upon this church for vision, Father, for outreach for the gospel of Jesus Christ, Father. In whatever ways you bring to the hearts of the leadership of this church, Father, I pray that your will would be done in that regard. Again, thank you, Father. Thank you for JCCT. Thank you for all that you have done. And thank you for what you will do in the future. In Jesus' name.
Thank you, Bryce, for your
powerful message. If we could all stand.